You're listening to Democracy Optimist, a special election year series from Eastern Standard, WEKU, and Dynamics Productions. Our host, University of Kentucky election law and voting research professor, Josh Douglas.
What does it mean?
Throughout the 2024 election season, we're bringing you conversations with election and voting experts from across the political spectrum so that when you go to the polls on November 5th, you'll get there fully informed about how it all works. Here's Joshua Douglas.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law with a dose of hope sprinkled in. We talk a lot about felon disenfranchisement, which is the practice of taking away the right to vote from someone who is convicted of a felony. And we talk a lot about rights restoration, or giving the right to vote back. Today, we are honored to speak with someone who recently regained her rights and has advocated for a change to the laws, as well as the law student who helped her through the process to have her criminal conviction expunged in Kentucky. Deb Grainer and Claire Sandberg, welcome to Democracy Optimist. So, Deb, we'll start with you. Tell us your story, from the mistake you made way back in 2011 to your push for a restoration of voting rights now.
Well, thank you, Dr. D. I moved to Kentucky at the end of 2008 with my husband, who got a retirement job becoming a tour guide at Buffalo Trace Distillery. We got to run a lovely house. We joined a church. I looked for work. It was hard to come by any kind of employment. And I suffered from an increasing amount of depression and started drinking rather heavily. And over a two-year period of time, things got really bad for me. And I, in a drunken blackout on Halloween in 2010, I caused a fire in our rental home, and I was, of course, arrested and convicted of arson. It's been a long battle. I finished my probation. Fortunately, I never had to go to, I was never incarcerated. In my court trial case, I was pleaded to a lesser felony. I always get the letters mixed up. I'm sorry, whether it was a C or a D felony. So if I was told if I pleaded guilty, I wouldn't have to go to jail or prison. So I did that. And I finished my probation in the five-year period. It was mostly unsupervised because I'm not really a big troublemaker. I had a bad time and made a terrible mistake. And so when I finished my probation and really realized that I could not vote, I always had before. Back home in Pennsylvania, when I found I couldn't vote, I applied to the governor for clemency and, of course, never heard back from him at that time. And then I found Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. And they have been working on the situation of felony disenfranchisement for close to 20 years now. So I joined them in 2018 because even though I'm not much of a numbers person, I'll never forget these numbers. At that time, it was out there that over 310,000 Kentuckians were not able to vote because of having a felony in their past. That equaled 1 in 10 of voting age people. And for people of color, that was 1 in 3.
Wow. And, you know, Kentucky has one of the strictest laws in the country. And Deb, I love your bravery in openly sharing your story in an effort to explain what happened and also to try to help people. So in 2019, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear granted voting rights to thousands of people convicted of crimes. And Deb, you were one of those people who got your right to vote back. What was it like to vote again in 2020? What went through your mind when you voted?
Well, it was really kind of a particularly stressful time for most of us because it was right in the beginning and mid COVID. So we had filed for absentee ballots because we didn't think we were going to go into to vote in person. I spilled coffee on mine. And so I went to vote in person And they saw that I had an absentee ballot, so they weren't going to let me vote, or we had to sort it out. Fortunately, the county clerk was there. I had met him in the past. And I went in there, mask on my face, and I got to vote. And I forgot my camera, my cell phone on the way in. So Mr. Hancock took pictures of me voting. So that was wonderful. It was a very freeing feeling and healing. Although I knew, like you said, the work's not yet done because there's so many other folks out there that were not in that 140 to 170,000 people that were affected by the Governor Beshear's executive order.
Mm-hmm. Claire, you're a third-year law student at the University of Kentucky, Rosenberg College of Law. I haven't had the pleasure of having you in class, but we've interacted a bunch in the law building. And I know you're also enrolled in the legal clinic at the law school and worked on Deb's case. How did you first hear about Deb's case and take her on as a client?
Yeah, so I first heard about Deb's case through the clinic at UK. Third-year law students are permitted to take real cases under the supervision of the director of the legal clinic, Professor Delora Hughes. And so I was a student in the fall, but Professor Hughes saw that I had an interest in continuing to help with pro bono cases over Christmas break. And when I heard about Deb's case, I was really excited about the idea of helping someone expunge their record before the new year.
So let's make sure we understand what's going on. So, Deb, you got a restoration of voting rights back from the governor's order in 2019, but you still had a felony conviction on your record. So Claire's work was to try to get that conviction expunged, right, to get it off the record. So, Claire, talk about what you did. Walk us through the process to seek an expungement of Deb's record.
Since I have my limited license to practice as a student attorney, I was really able to fill out all of the forms necessary to go through this process. Deb mentioned how it can get a little bit complicated with the type of crime that was committed and the disposition of the case, but there's a lot of possibilities for expungement. So I got some information from Deb to figure out what kind of case we were working with. And then I tried to personalize the care, personalize the work on the forms for Deb and Deb's story specifically. More than just checking a box, we wanted to give information on what Deb did in the past and how she's grown as a person today. And really give a full picture of Deb's story.
Yeah. And so it didn't take that long, actually, for everything to get processed. To kind of walk us through, you know, after you submitted the paperwork, you know, what happened next? What did you hear next?
Yeah, it was amazing. So we started the first week of winter break, and I just went in every day for just a couple of hours. It didn't really take that long. I just wanted to make sure everything was in perfect shape. I got Professor Hughes to look over everything. And then after Deb signed it, we submitted the files to the court, and we weren't expecting to hear back until the new year. I was kind of crossing my fingers that we'd get right at New Year's, but we ended up getting it right before Christmas. So it was a perfect Christmas surprise.
And what was your reaction when you got the notice from the court that the expungement had been approved and that, you know, she no longer had a record?
I was thrilled. I think that it was such a great reminder after a really stressful time during finals and kind of getting lost in the weeds of law school to be reminded of why I do this and really getting to help someone out.
Yeah, it's you know, most people who go to law school do it because they want to serve. They want to serve the community. They want to help people. And so great that you had a chance while still in law school to do that for someone who has really been an advocate for so many others in Kentucky. Deb, what was your reaction when you learned that the expungement was approved?
Well, first of all, my probation was over, or my five-year waiting period after my probation was over in October, and I contacted Professor Hughes sometime November-ish, and I was saying, oh, I was hoping to get this taken care of before the end of the year, and she said she had to wait. She had not received the paperwork that she needed from the Department of Corrections, I think it comes from, or the state police. And so as soon as she got it, I got a call. I went in and had my interview or done my paperwork with Claire. And I thought, oh, yeah, it's Christmas time. We're not going to hear anything. And Professor Hughes called me on December 22nd and gave me the best Christmas present ever. I was just thrilled, absolutely thrilled.
That's great. And Claire, what has this experience meant to you as you're about to embark on your legal career after you graduate?
Definitely. Well, like you said, this was a great experience for me to get real world experience. This was a great opportunity for me to remind myself of why I went to law school. I also think that cases, pro bono cases while you're in law school, provides a great mutual aid opportunity. Because yes, we were able to help Deb, but I benefited from this experience as well by gaining legal experience and learning how to navigate a case and maintain the trust of my clients.
Mm-hmm. Now, Deb, you've gone through a kind of incredible journey, right? From, you know, the depths of despair that occurred in 2010 and then the conviction in 2011 through getting a restoration of your voting rights to now an expungement of your record. What do you think your story means for others in Kentucky? What message would you give to people who are facing similar challenges?
Well, first of all, I think I did put in a lot of work to try to get this all taken care of on my own as well as I could. I was very fortunate to be taken on by the legal clinic, which was awesome because you can go to like expungement clinics and everybody's out in the world and there's nothing confidential or comforting about sitting in a room with a lot of people that are seeking the same end to their criminal history. So what it meant to me was that I was really taken care of kindly, promptly. It didn't need to be confidential, but I felt very protected. I think I still can be a voice and or a face to people who are still waiting to have their felonies expunged, to learn about the need for voting and trying to encourage folks to do that. It's not just being able to get a job or rent a home that your felony can hamper you with. So I want to be out there. Our work is not yet done until we get a constitutional amendment. And so I will keep talking and I'll be the face that I can be to help other people understand that there can be an end to this and it can be very positive.
That's great. Now, you mentioned that you joined the group Kentuckians for the Commonwealth that has worked on the issue of restoration of voting rights in Kentucky. Tell us a little bit about the organization and what it's doing.
Kentuckians for the Commonwealth is a now 40-year or 41-year-old grassroots movement that started in eastern Kentucky with the coal miners back in the day in the 60s, I believe it was. And they pick different types of social issues to work on. They're getting big into climate now. They're into the whole rent situation, economic justice, abolition. They do a myriad of things, and they're trying to build a really more inclusive organization, nonprofit. We have big, hairy, audacious goals now to get to make KFTC even better and more inclusive for all Kentuckians. And they are just so wonderful to work with. They've been so supportive. Any little thing you do is enough, you know. So it's just been a wonderful experience. And I don't know why anybody would not want to be part of KFTC.
Sure. So you mentioned a constitutional amendment to change Kentucky law. So what's the best argument for why the state should change its approach to felon disenfranchisement? Claire, I'll start with you because you worked with someone, right, as an advocate who had been going through these various issues. So what did this experience teach you about the state's approach to felon disenfranchisement in general, and what's the argument that we should change our approach?
I think that it can be confusing for people to figure out a way out of the situation that they've tried so hard to move on from. I think that there are many years and many ways that you try to, like, resolve the situation.
And it took, you know, it took a lawyer or a lawyer in training to work with someone just to, for simple things like, you know, getting an expungement of their record. You know, not everyone can go to the legal clinic. And it, I think it demonstrates the that, you know, it takes it, because, as you mentioned, it's so confusing that it takes resources that perhaps are better used for other things if we,
absolutely,
you know, simplified the law. Deb, what about you? What's your best argument for why we should have a state constitutional amendment on the state's practice of felon disenfranchisement?
Well, the number one thing is that if someone is able to vote or that's restored to them, it is proven that it helps cut down on recidivism. So, I mean, if you give somebody their right back, it makes you feel more like a whole person again, like whatever the bad thing that happened or you did in the past has been, you know, you're able to vote, so you're able to be a complete citizen, and you may even be able to be part of a movement that will help cure another ill or another bad situation that are still prevalent here in Kentucky.
Yeah. So this show is called Democracy Optimist. Mm-hmm. Are you both optimistic about democracy, given the work that you've done and what you've gone through? Claire, did this experience with working with Deb make you more optimistic about democracy, or is it, you know, not so optimistic because you saw the various hurdles and the complexities involved in the law?
I'm actually more optimistic after this experience. I think it can be daunting whenever you begin the process, but just seeing how fast it was to get all of these papers through the court system and get Deb's records expunged, I feel really optimistic that we can continue improving on our practice and on our methods. It was also a great experience to learn just how much people want to regain their right to vote.
Deb, what about you? Are you optimistic about voting in elections?
Well, when I got up this morning and turned on my computer and read that we now have four bills that are pending in the legislature right now, the fourth one was filed today, I'm very optimistic. There's still some carve-outs that are in some of the bills that are out there right now. And there's one that's pretty darn near what we would call perfect at KFTC. So, yeah, I'm optimistic that Kentucky can get past this and do something that'll be positive for a whole lot of people in Kentucky.
And these are bills to change the rules on felon disenfranchisement.
Correct.
All right, here's the big question for you, Deb. Why should people vote? You know, voter turnout in a presidential election is, you know, still 60-65%. When you get to the local elections, much lower. You're someone who has denied the right to vote and has regained it. Why should people vote?
I don't know why people don't vote. I don't know why there's such apathy and such disinterest, or I get a little tired of hearing, well, my vote doesn't count. Well, when your vote's been taken away, you know how much your vote counts. Whether or not everything that you vote for or against doesn't turn out the way you want it, it's still an integral part of being a citizen of the United States. And I believe that everybody should be encouraged, and if they don't know, to get some kind of education around why it is so important to vote. And it's the only way that we can really participate in our democracy is to be part of the voting public.
Deb Greiner and Claire Sandberg, thank you for coming on Democracy Optimist to tell your story. Very inspiring. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, Josh, there have been many legal challenges to the practice of felon disenfranchisement. Tell us more about those challenges.
Yeah, advocates have argued that the policy of felon disenfranchisement violates the Voting Rights Act because a disproportionately large number of people who are disenfranchised identify as racial minorities. Courts have rejected those challenges, however, though there have been vigorous dissents. The U.S. Supreme Court has not weighed in on the question of the Voting Rights Act and felon disenfranchisement. There have also been challenges under the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, but most of those have failed as well. But there's a new case to watch. In August of last year, the conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down Mississippi's felon disenfranchisement law, saying that it imposes a cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Mississippi has the highest percentage of disenfranchisement in the country at 11% of its voting age population, 59% of which are Black individuals. However, the full Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals put the decision on hold while it reconsiders the issue. The full court heard oral argument in January 2024. As of the taping of this episode, we are still waiting for a ruling. But either way, this case seems likely to head to the Supreme Court in terms of whether the Eighth Amendment bars certain felon disenfranchisement laws for being cruel and unusual punishment. It's certainly one to watch.
Well, give us another of your fun election facts.
Well, maybe this one's not so fun, but it is interesting, I think. Kentucky was among the first U.S. states to formally establish felon disenfranchisement in 1792. The Kentucky Constitution then read, quote, "Laws shall be made to exclude from suffrage those who thereafter be convicted of bribery, perjury, forgery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors." Now, the current version of Kentucky's Constitution, adopted in 1891, reads, "Persons convicted in any court of competent jurisdiction of treason or felony or bribery in an election or of such high misdemeanor as the General Assembly may declare shall operate as an exclusion from the right of suffrage, but persons hereby excluded may be restored to their civil rights by executive pardon." And that last sentence is why Governor Beshear was able to issue a pardon of many people's felony convictions, or at least restore the right to vote to many individuals. Now, the crimes that are classified as felonies, which again, the state constitution says creates disenfranchisement, are plentiful, surely more than those who wrote the Kentucky Constitution likely could have imagined back then. Here are some of the crimes that you may not think of that will result in lifetime disenfranchisement unless there's an order from the governor to restore your rights. Tax crimes, theft, public intoxication, small amounts of drug distribution, property damage, forgery, using or manufacturing counterfeit gambling chips, and credit card fraud. That said, there have been bipartisan proposals in Kentucky to amend the state constitution to remove the severe felon disenfranchisement it allows.
And what's that one thing that we can do to support democracy?
Well, as I said, there's been a bipartisan push to make Kentucky not one of the most severe states when it comes to felon disenfranchisement. And so this is an issue where I think contacting your legislator to advocate for reform of felon disenfranchisement policies can make a difference. As I said, there's a bipartisan push in Kentucky to change the state constitution. Second, if you yourself do have a felony conviction, you should check to see if your rights were restored. As I said, Governor Beshear restored the right to vote to thousands of individuals, and many people don't realize that they are now eligible to vote. The Campaign Legal Center has a free confidential tool for individuals with felony convictions to find out if they're eligible to vote at restoreyourvote.org. So check it out and share the website with others. And finally, a word about language. You might have noticed that I use the term people with a felony conviction or individuals with a felony conviction instead of the word felons, and that's purposeful. I don't think it's fair to label someone for life based on the worst mistake that they made.
Thanks for joining us for Democracy Optimist, a special series produced by Dynamics Productions and WEKU. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm your series producer, Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer, Ella Fitzgeraldine Studio Dog. We're online at democracyoptimist.com, and podcast versions are available on Apple and Spotify. Want to get in touch? Our email is democracyoptimist@gmail.com. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Democracy Optimist from Eastern Standard and WEKU.
I can educate myself on the fight.